Money and markets. We are headed for a close this year of the dollar down, down 9.21%. That's after the tax reform bill is passed. The long treasury, the TLT ETF, is now down to 7%. It's been higher this year, but still quite a respectable performance given the bumping of the interest rates by the Fed. The intermediate ends the year up 1.84%. The aggregate bond 3.13%. And junk 5.55%, very respectable given the credit problems, particularly in the oil and gas patch. The S&P now up 22% for the year. We see funds flowing out of U.S. equity funds, probably taking gains since the U.S. market has done so well since 2009. Home builders still outperforming the S&P at 31.75%. The European ETF up 26.13%, so Europe's still ahead of the United States. Germany up 28%, very strong. And, of course, we know Germany, in one survey this year, passed the U.S. as most respected nation in the world. The developed markets minus North America up 24.42%. Large caps, China's up 32.25%. Small caps up 32.66, and emerging markets up 34.34%. So very great strength in the emerging markets in Asia this year. Commodities improving, but still down for the year, down 2.48%, but that's looking good given where we've been this year. Gold now up 9.76%, silver back down to down 3.25% for the year, and oil finally may be flat. It's down 0.95% for the year. So can you imagine if oil ends the year even? It didn't, you know, it's been so negative this year. Anyway, the stopgap funding by Congress has been passed, so there will be no government shutdown. That's not surprising. When you think about doing tax reform and the shutdown funding before they leave tomorrow, it's a lot to get done. The reality is, if you sit back and look at the last year, it's been quite a fractious year in the District of Columbia and in the United States, and one that sort of rocked the global financial markets and geopolitics everywhere. And so I want to focus on what's been happening over the last week, because it has dramatic implications. No matter where you are in the world, it has dramatic implications to you. The faction behind Trump that engineered the Trump victory has managed to really turn the ship back to, as we discussed throughout the election, the desire to reground in North America and not put North America at risk or the United States at risk, not strip the United States further to keep the empire going, but rather, you know, strip the empire to keep making sure that we're safe and sound inside of Fortress America. In essence, reshoring and insourcing a lot of things back behind the two oceans. Let's look at what they've accomplished now that the tax reform bill is done. We have a new defense budget with an extraordinary increase in defense spending designed to really replenish and restore the military, which in many aspects has been stripped. Now, it doesn't re-engineer the military, as we discussed in the second quarter wrap-up, so you're basically keeping a very large and very expansive command structure and just pouring in new money, including new money to some of the big contractors who were so instrumental in $21 trillion going missing. Tax reform has been passed. Tax reform is essential for repatriation of foreign cash and attracting big corporations to bring that money back into the United States and invest it. Much of it easily could go to doing stock repurchases or paying down debt that were used to basically do stock repurchases while the money was offshore. So one-time repatriation is going to happen. But the other thing you're doing is by significantly lowering the tax rate, you're making it possible for corporations to stay in the United States, not do the tax inversions, and not to keep shifting out around the world. Finally, a major push was used by those factions who lost the election to basically stop Trump and the current group in their place with a Russian narrative. And thanks in a great deal part, I believe, to Bill Binney and his work, the Russian narrative has been soundly defeated. Not to say that they won't keep pushing it, but it really has gone nowhere. And if anything, Mueller's sort of twisting in the wind. They've been very successful at outwitting and outshouting the Shrieking Meter on numerous occasions. They have a new Supreme Court justice in who's making a difference, and more coming. So a great deal can be done to basically put people into the Supreme Court in alignment with the thinking of the Republican group now in charge. Finally, they have essentially won on the immigration policies, although it was a very rambunctious process. But the reality is there's a real moving of the immigration policies being implemented to actually reflect the laws as they are. And finally, there appears to be a significant move to cut out the Mexican drug cartels who've been moving in. And I think we're clearly doing a major business with the Bush/Clinton group. So they've put into place a lot of the basic component parts they need to insource and rebuild what they refer to as the defense industrial base in the United States, and then build out the space effort. That's very significant. We see with the tax reform passing and the new defense budget done, we see Eric Schmidt announcing he's leaving Google. If you remember, Eric Schmidt and Google were probably Hillary Clinton's number one supporters, and it was anticipated in a Clinton administration that Eric Schmidt would have a very significant role, whether from Google or now their parent company, Alphabet, or in a more formal position in government. But anyway, the fact that Eric Schmidt is leaving Google signals to me that the Trump faction has managed to consolidate their power, sort of dig in deep, and are clearly there for the, you know, the long term, or certainly through the 2018 election. And so time for Eric Schmidt to go. Google is much safer and better off with him gone and new leadership. But what that says is the new faction has consolidated their power and are now clearly in charge. U.S. tax reform. I wrote an article that I refer to consistently throughout the year after the election, because it was very clear to me that people did not understand. And we hammered this point home both in the article Productivity Backlash, but in the various conversations I had with Dr. Farrell and John Rappaport about the campaign and what was happening. What you see is a real turn, and it was Saker who described it first this way, from the people who wanted to basically drain the United States to build a global empire. You saw a turn from that group to a group that wants to rebuild the United States and is willing to sacrifice the empire to do it. And what that means, among other things, is major insourcing. There's over $2.5 trillion of cash being held by American multinationals abroad. Part of tax reform is to help bring that money back and get it investing in America. Now, some of that's great. Some of it's not so great. AT&T says they're going to invest another $1 billion as a result of the tax reform. At the same time, I got an email from Jason Budsmith warning me that the rollout of 5G is accelerating. So, you know, who knows whether AT&T is going to help build out the most superb mind control networks ever created. So I'm not saying it's all good, but there's no doubt that there's an enormous amount of corporate investment now headed our way. The tax reform continues the process of falling corporate taxes as a percentage of both U.S. government tax revenues and a percentage of GNP. So at the same time, budgets and tax reform mean corporations are getting a steadily bigger percent of the GNP on the revenue side. So this win-lose divergence between the GNP and the general population and corporations is going to continue. And the real strength in it is in tax reform, the corporate drops are permanent, whereas the individual drops are not. So the corporate rate drops from 35 to 21%. Now, interestingly enough, it excludes worldwide income. So now instead of being taxed on worldwide income, they're taxed on only U.S. income. That's a dramatic change, arguably more dramatic than the drop in the rate from 35 to 21%. And they have a one-time repatriation rate of 8%. So if you look at the corporations who stash cash away abroad, they're getting a very different treatment, a much friendlier treatment than the individuals who tried to stash cash abroad to avoid taxes. That group has been subject to 20 years of enforcement threats and penalties and fines. Anyway, this is clearly very supportive of continued growth in the stock market. And it really reflects a desire for a dramatic change in policy. And the way to do it is to do it on a highly centralized basis through the big corporations and go really fast is the theory. The idea is, will this trickle down or not? If you look at how the tax reform went through the sausage factory, you saw the middle class constituencies and families fight back. And I suspect it's turned out much better for individuals and families than they think. Everyone I know who's pro forma their taxes so far has seen dramatic improvement in what they estimate they're going to owe next year. Again, if you're in a high state and local income tax with high property taxes or a very big mortgage, I would make sure you pay your estimated in December so you lock in those benefits which you might lose next year. Anyway, the question, of course, if you approach rebuilding America using the big corporate model, will it work? As I said, the political process really worked hard to improve the package for middle class and small business. I think the Republicans are going to have to go out and sell this to the American people who do not yet understand what it means. And it's going to take us all a long time to digest. It's called the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And they were thinking, in fact, of changing the name before they finalized the bill, but I haven't seen if it would change. There are a lot of little nuggets in here. I've printed the whole thing, which is over 1,000 pages long, because I want to skim through it. You never know what is hidden away quietly in these bills, so I really want to take a look. One thing that didn't make it through was a radical change in the estate tax, but they were able to double the exemption, and that's going to make a big difference to family-owned farms and businesses throughout the heartland, which are really struggling with reengineering their estates in anticipation, of an intergenerational transfer. And the reality is, at the current exemption, they were facing an enormous and very unfair inflation tax. Anyway, so more on tax reform after I have a chance to skim through the whole 1,000 pages. But what we're talking about is a very significant bill, and the Republicans are clearly feeling very proud of themselves for getting this through. The big question and the big challenge is if the growth in the economy does not work, and in fact you have to triggers serious cuts in spending as a result of the lower tax revenues, then there's going to be a piper to pay. But I think Congress thinks they're going to face that someday, hopefully after the 2018 election. The administration also came out, so we had the $700 billion defense authorization, which included a, depending on how you count it, $56 billion to $70 billion increase in defense spending. Then we had a tax reform pass, and then we also had Trump outline his national security policy, which is remarkable. Their page after page after page that read as though Dr. Farrell and I have written it. It's kind of interesting. And it's hard to kind of sort some of what it says with what's going on in these different topics like 5G and mind control. But I will say this, it's quite well done and it's worth a read. It's up on the White House website. And so it's worth a read. What it describes is a vision of a successful nation leading and competing in a multipolar world. It's almost as though the new administration is admitting we're moving to a multipolar world and we're not going to run a U.S. global empire. They seem to have given up quietly on the empire, but insisting that America is remain a leading nation. The president created a Space Corps. It's part of the $700 billion authorization, and it's also part of the national security policy. The big decision by Eisenhower after the Sputnik episode was to ensure that space was part of a civilian agency in NASA by creating a Space Corps under the Air Force. The military finally got the space program back. It looks like it's not clear to me NASA's going to go under the Space Corps. I'm not sure how that works with NASA and the Space Corps, but the Air Force is now back in control of the big money space program is what it looks like. There is heightened attention to cyberspace and cybersecurity in the national security policy. And one very interesting thing is it defines transnational crime as a primary risk. Now, transnational crime has been a primary risk all along, but the U.S. was so dependent on the profits of transnational crime, we've always described it as terrorism or other things. But frankly, it's interesting to see what that means, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what it might mean in a second. There's some other positive influences you can see on the national security policy. One is, I think Secretary Mattis is finally having a an impact. Mattis is quoted, one of my favorite Mattis quotes. He says, "History is clear: nations with strong allies thrive, and those without them wither." And you can see from the national security policy that Trump is clearly trying to communicate that he understands that we need strong allies and we need to build strong allies. And he doesn't say that Russia and China have been out there doing a better job than we have of building strong allies, but I would say that they have. He talks a lot about cultivating values and the need to win globally based on culture. And good to see there's still some promotion of women, which means it's very clear. I showed you the chart. If you read my Promoting Women series, my chart at the in the last part of that series showing basically the United States. If you take the GNP of the United States plus all women globally, it beats Asia. So, no matter which way we go, the consumer market means we're going to promote that we're the friend of women globally. It's very interesting, but you know, there it is. Trump can, he's done the math and he wants to promote women. Anyway, it's a very interesting document and very well done. And it represents a remarkable turn in American strategy, particularly when you combine it with the extent to which we are bringing back sort of the defense industrial base. One of the things the policy talks about is the fact that you can't build a strong military when you have supply lines that are not trustworthy because you're depending for parts on your competitors and with long supply lines. Some of this, again, remember, is automation. If you look at the shift from Global 2.0 to 3.0, Global 2.0 struggled with the unions. Now that sort of these folks think they've, or the corporations think they've dealt with unions, you can bring it back, and you don't need human labor. You can do a lot of this with robotics and automation. If you look at the latest reports, corporations are really struggling to hire. Kiplinger reported the week before last, in fact, that they've given up. Corporations in America have given up trying to get the labor they need from schools. They're just going to start training young people and do apprentices themselves. The reality is they need a very sophisticated workforce, robotics, engineers. You need far more technical expertise, and that's why the STEM programs have become so important. And that's not what the schools and the universities have been preparing. So there's a real mismatch between skills and the labor who's now spent a fortune for college and an education and has student loans. But their skills are not appropriate to what the corporations need, and why that was allowed to happen is just astonishing. And it's one of the things you'll hear and feel in this policy. They're beating the drum about this, and be ready next year to hear a lot about workplace training, apprentice programs, and corporations training people for the higher skill jobs. The missing money, the $21 trillion missing, and Dr. Skidmore's report continues to reverberate in many different places. He did a great new interview on Michigan Public Radio, which I, if you go to missingmoney.salieri.com, you can link to the news coverage section and hear the latest interviews. We've been watching purges all year long, and Dr. Farrell and I, in News Trends and Stories in January, we'll talk a lot about the purges. One real question in my mind: we've seen sex purges and political purges of various kinds. We haven't seen the kind of shakedown purge that we saw in Saudi Arabia, where literally you roll up all the billionaires, put them over at the Ritz-Carlton. There's rumors that some torture was going on, and basically say, give us 70% of your money, or you're going to stay in the Ritz-Carlton prison. And it's what I call a shakedown purge. And it wouldn't surprise me, as the $21 trillion reverberates around, if we started to go into shakedown purges, because wherever that money went, my guess is the Bush and the Clintons ran off with way too much of it. And there are a lot of people who think the country needs that money for a variety of purposes. So don't think that there might not be purges to do some kind of shakedown of the different politicians and different factions who basically took too big a cut for themselves. Anyway, so shakedown purge in 2018, big question. But if I had to guess, I would say yes, it's coming. We have an election in Spain, the Catalan election. The separatists claimed a narrow victory today, and that is an example of exactly what's going to happen as the 2.0 legacy systems, including the national governments, struggle with the sort of emptiness of their coffers as a result of the financial coup. So the money's been moved out. It's in 3.0. And everybody, all the taxpayers sitting and being asked to fund the liabilities now that the assets have disappeared are struggling and want to get out. So it wouldn't surprise me. We saw a lot of talk about secession in California, but it's suddenly, ever since the fires, no talk of secession. It's pretty interesting. So, but we're going to start seeing different individuals, different local governments, local state governments all around the world struggling with the liabilities in 2.0. You know, their attitude is, if the breakaways can walk with their feet, how come we? Meantime, we have a UN vote against defying Trump on the Jerusalem. We had over 120 countries voted in favor of a UN resolution calling for the United States to drop its resignation of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, despite Trump's threats to cut financial aid. And you kind of wonder, Trump has clearly been, since April, on the Make Israel Great Again plan. And you wonder why Israel is turning into the administration's huge black eye. And unfortunately, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know what strings they're pulling and what threats they're making. But at this point, you almost wonder to what extent, if there's one head of the FBI in the 90s who said Israel was the number one threat to American national security. And you wonder what's up behind the scenes with that. Bitcoin the op. If you haven't listened to our Soleri report on Bitcoin the op, I strongly recommend it. We also have a great discussion with Dr. Farrell in several parts of the news, trends, and stories about Bitcoin. Bitcoin peaked on December 17th at 19,200 and is now trading at 1,400. So it's as volatile as ever. There's some people who are predicting the market's about to crash and be over. I don't think so. I think if you look at the desire for the tech side of the house, the NSA side of the house, to recreate and recommand currencies globally and evolve beyond the dollar, especially get out of bank deposit insurance, I think they can take this much further, much higher. It is much cheaper to simply manipulate the price of Bitcoin up and get all the freedom fighters inventing your digital global currency train tracks. So I think this op has a lot further to go, but you know, it could crash in tomorrow. So just make sure, if you're going to participate, that you listen to Bitcoin the op and make sure you understand this is a speculation and you don't want any more money in it than you're prepared to lose 100% of.